Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 5, The Meeting of Nanda Maharaj and Vasudev, Text 14. Gopa Parasparam Prishta Dadi Chira Kritam Bubi Asintanto Vilampanto Navanitaish Cha Chikshipahu Kopa Parasparam Hrishta Tadi Chira Gritambubi Asinchanto Vilimpanto Navanitaischa Chikshipahu Gopa Parasparam Hrishta Dadi Chira Gritam Bubihi Asinchanto Vilimpanto Navanitaischa Chikshipahu Gopa Parasparam Hrishta Nichira Gritam Vavi Gopa Parasparam Hrishta Hari Chira Gritam Bubi Sin Chanto Vilim Panto Avanita Chichik Shihu Baba Prasparam Vista Vaishnavis. Gopa Parasparam Hrishta Tadi Chira Gritam Bubihi Sin Chanto Vilimpanto Avanita Isachik Siddhu Aram Chitra Kopa Parasparam Hrishta Dadi Chira Kritam Bubi Asin Chanto Vivian Panto Navanita Istachik Sipu Kopaha, the cowherd man. Paraspara on one another. Krishtaha, being so pleased. Dadhi, with curd. Chira, with condensed milk. Grita ambubihi, with water mixed with butter. Asanchantaha, sprinkling. Vilimpantaha, smearing. Navanitahaicha, and with butter. Chikchipahu, they threw on one another. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Kijai. In gladness, the cowherd men enjoyed the great festival by splashing one another's bodies with a mixture of curd, condensed milk, butter, and water. They threw butter on one another and smeared it on one another's bodies. Please repeat. In gladness, the cowherd men enjoyed the great festival by splashing one another's bodies with a mixture of curd, condensed milk, butter, and water. They threw butter on one another and smeared it on one another's bodies. Purport. From this statement, we can understand that 5,000 years ago, not only was there enough milk, butter, and curd to eat, drink, and cook with, but when there was a festival, it would be thrown about without restriction. There was no limit to how extensively milk, butter, curd, and other such products were used in human society. Everyone had an ample stock of milk, and by using it in many varied milk preparations, people would keep good health in natural ways and thus enjoy life in Krishna consciousness. Om Gyanatimurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuru and Militanyena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So the verse again, in gladness the cowherd men enjoyed the great festival by splashing one another's bodies with a mixture of curd, condensed milk, butter, and water. They threw butter on one another and smeared it on one another's bodies. So in Krishna book, when Srila Prabhupada goes through this passage, he adds some details. I'll quote from the Krishna book. When the cowherd men saw the pastimes of the cowherd women, they became very joyful, and in response, they also began to throw yogurt, milk, clarified butter, and water upon the bodies of the gopis. Then both parties began to throw butter on each other's bodies. So, and you know, Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada adds the details that not only were the cowherd men enjoying this pastime, the cowherd women were also. So, the cowherd men and women were living in villages and towns and the countryside, and they were depending fully on the Vaishya activities of agriculture and cow protection. Krishi go rakshavani jam vaishikarma swabhava jam. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna describes, you know, the activities of the different varnas, and the vaishyas, or the agriculturalists, they are depending upon agriculture, making use of the bull to plow the fields, and goraksha, the protection of cows. I think there was an incident in the early days when one devotee was assisting Srila Prabhupada in translating Bhagavad Gita, and he translated goraksha as cattle raising. And Srila Prabhupada changed it to cow protection, because in modern society, they raise the cattle, but they slaughter them. And, you know, Srila Prabhupada was very compassionate, and it hurt him very much when he thought about how many cows were being slaughtered in the modern society. He was talking about his experiences in South Africa, and he said that there he had observed that before they slaughter the cows, they take every last drop of milk out of them, and then they slaughter them. And he was very sad that that is the situation in the modern world. So by protecting the cows and engaging in agricultural activities, a society can become very prosperous. Of course, there's an additional activity that Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, vanijam, trade. So that if there's some excess agricultural produce or milk products, they can be traded. And, you know, Srila Prabhupada once described how it would actually go in the villages. You know, they would get milk, and he said the villagers or the household would put the milk, all the milk that came from the cows, into a big pan that was being heated with fire. He said during the day, everyone could take milk from that big pan, however much they wanted. And then at the end of the day, it would be collected and turned into whatever was left over would be turned into yogurt. And then the yogurt would be put into pots, and then people could take from that. And when the yogurt accumulated, it could be churned. And the result of churning the yogurt would be butter. And then the butter could be turned into ghee. And as a byproduct of churning the yogurt, there would be not only butter, but there would be buttermilk. So in this way, all these products would be generated. And if there was some excess, then it would be traded. You know, the agriculturalists could trade with the townspeople to get different necessities. So it's a very natural way of life. I remember the first time I went to India, 1979, the devotees all went together on an Air India flight. nowadays when the devotees go to India, they all go on separate airplanes, each individual devotee or small group traveling. But in those days, they made arrangements where all the devotees from the whole country, they would come to Los Angeles or New York, and they'd all get on a plane, several hundred of them, and have a big party. They have Mangalarti on the airplane and prasadam distribution and things like that. It was really amazing. But I remember we were flying, 25 or 30,000 feet in the sky over India. I was sitting by the window seat and looking down. It was early in the morning. The sun was just coming up. I could see, these little columns of smoke, rising from the villages. It was kind of like a windless day. But, you look down and you could see these little villages and little, people were lighting the morning fires and little columns of smoke were coming up into the sky. And I was thinking, village life, just like thousands of years ago. So around that time, there was talk of, there might be some war or something like that. And you would think, we're living here in Los Angeles, a big metropolis, and, you can walk down the street to Sprouts, get all your necessities of life, buy whatever you want, food. But where is that food coming from? It's not being, for the most part, it's not being grown locally. It's coming from hundreds or thousands of miles or even tens of thousands of miles away. Fruit from Chile or whatever. So if there is some social disturbance, some earthquake or some social disturbance or some war, then that whole system would break down. And the 20 million people that are living in Los Angeles, they would be without food. But that village life, they would survive. Our big advanced technological civilization would collapse, but that village life would survive. Once Srila Prabhupada was describing how when he was a boy, 12 or 13 years old, his father took him out, from Calcutta to go stay in a village for a few days. And Srila Prabhupada was remembering, we went to this train station and then we went by bullock cart, for a long time. 24 miles or something, till we got to this village, very isolated village. He said there they were producing everything, all their necessities. And he was recalling, in the morning they would give me puffed rice with molasses and cream. Sounds like a very interesting preparation. And then during the rest of the day, rice, chapatis, dal, everything made from local produce, everything being produced locally. He recalled it, very fondly. So there was a natural system that was set up by God. Of course, we've made so many artificial arrangements these days and we're very confident of them. But ultimately, the world really depends upon, this simple natural life. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes anadbhavanti bhutani parjanyo anasambhava jagyad bhavati parjanyo yagya karma samudbhava. So anadbhavanti bhutani, living beings subsist on grains. That is the ultimate basis of life on Earth. Of course, suppose artificially you could restrict your diet in such a way and perhaps survive without any grains, but the usual system is anadbhavanti bhutani. Living beings subsist on grains or agricultural products, plant produce, fruits and vegetables, grains. That is the ultimate basis of human civilization. And along with that, you know, the milk products that are being described here. So anadbhavanti bhutani, but where do the grains come from? Parjanyo anasambhava. The grains come from the rains. And we don't think very much about it, you know, being that most of us are city people and we just see rain as a kind of a momentary inconvenience. Or maybe if there's not too much rain, we think, well, we can't water our lawn. But really, you know, if you think about the larger picture, the whole cycle of life on Earth depends upon the rains. And from the rains come grains, fruits, vegetables, everything that provides the basis, the most fundamental basis for life on Earth. So parjanyo anasambhava. In some places there is drought that is so severe that it does begin to affect agricultural production. And that creates a very severe crisis in human civilization. And if it just happens in one place while things are going on everywhere else, you know, the rains are coming, it's not so bad. You know, you might think, oh, in Somalia or someplace there's drought and people are starving, and yes, we'll help them. But if the lack of rain becomes worldwide, then it becomes a bigger crisis, and eventually in Kali Yuga, that sort of thing will happen. You know, what happens now in one part of the world will become more widespread with bigger consequences. So, parjanyo anasambhava. Yagyad bhavati parjanyo. And where does the rain come from? Rain, Krishna says, comes from the performance of sacrifice. Yagya, from yagya comes rain. So we may not understand all the subtle connections there are between our thoughts and actions and what happens in the world, but actually, according to Krishna, there are subtle connections like that. So that, you know, the rain depends upon sacrifice. Yagyad bhavati parjanyo. Yagya karma samudbhavaha. And where does the sacrifice come from? Well, that comes from the different kinds of activities that people by their nature are meant to perform. So, in the different ages, in the different yugas, different kinds of sacrifice are recommended. Yagyair sankartana prayar yajanti hi sumeda saha. In the age of Kali, intelligent people will perform the sankirtan yagya. And it's because that yagya is going on that things are as nice as they are, even in the midst of Kali Yuga. We may not understand exactly how that's true, but the formula is given by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. So, the agriculturalists like Nanda Maharaj and the residents of Vrindavan, they are protecting the cows, they're getting milk products, and they, we can see that they are very prosperous. You know, they have enough to use these milk products in a very lavish way in this festival that they're celebrating on the appearance of Lord Krishna. So sometimes they do trade the surplus. I mean, we were hearing the other day how, you know, once the gopis were going to take some butter or ghee, some other milk products, yogurt, to the town, and Krishna and the cowherd boys blocked their way to take some tax, you know, as an excuse for Krishna to meet with Radharani. But it, you know, it shows that yes, sometimes they would trade their surplus milk products. So another point in this purport is, you know, Srila Prabhupada says, from this statement we can understand that 5,000 years ago there was enough milk, butter, etc. So what's being described here is Vedic culture. And many scientists and historians today, you know, have this idea that there was no Vedic culture in India 5,000 years ago. You know, they had this idea that originally there was no Vedic culture in India, and, you know, 5,000 years ago there was what they call some Aryan invasion, where the Vedic culture came into India from outside. So, yeah, that's something that, you know, in terms of our, you know, scientific preaching and academic preaching, you know, we have to deal with. But Srila Prabhupada was saying these are historical events. You know, like Kurukshetra, he said it's not just some symbol. You know, as some authors have tried to propose, there wasn't any real battle of Kurukshetra. Srila Prabhupada said it's there. Even today, you can go there, Kurukshetra. It's a stop. There's a railway station, Kurukshetra. You can get off. You can go to the place where the battle was fought. Once, during one of my trips to India, I went there. But the main point from this purport, however, is the importance of Krishigorakshavanijam, the activities of the Vaishya community in maintaining human society. And, you know, Srila Prabhupada had a broad vision for the Krishna consciousness movement. You know, he wanted temples in urban areas. You know, that was part of his mission. But he also wanted some communities in the rural areas where the kind of life being described here would be practiced. And, you know, there are such communities in different parts of the world where devotees, members of ISKCON, are trying to implement Srila Prabhupada's desires in that regard. Sometimes, yeah, we have festivals here at the temple. And I remember once, I think it was Ratna Bhushna had arranged for there to be churning of butter at one of our festivals. I don't know if it was on Janmashtami or whatever. It was a few years ago. But I remember devotees had a lot of fun, you know, churning the yogurt into butter and then distributing it. It's like Krishna would do as a little child. You know, he and Balaram and the other little cowherd children would go around to the different homes of the different residents and steal their butter and yogurt and distribute it to the monkeys and things like that. So it's a very natural, very wonderful way of life, and you know, Srila Prabhupada wanted it introduced, and as I said, some of his followers are engaged in doing that. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Bhrigupati Prabhu.
So would that be a correct way for a devotee to think that the only reason there's any rain in the world today is because of the Sankirtan movement?
Well, Krishna says, if yagyad bhavati parjan yo, rain comes from sacrifice. It could be seen, I mean, I think Srila Prabhupada had a broader vision that even though, you know, these other religious systems like, you know, Christianity and Islam and Judaism and so on are not the ultimate stage and perfection of religious life, they do have some concept of offering things for God's service, and they may be chanting and praying in their own way. So that also may be contributing. You know, say, why certain countries are prosperous could be in their history. They've performed some sacrifice for God, and therefore the remnants of that karma are still there. And therefore they're a little bit prosperous compared to the rest of the world. But as religious principles decline, their economic situation, political situation, cultural situation begins to degrade as they run through their good karma, you could say. But so I think the general principle is there, that sacrifice for God results in rain, which is the ultimate basis of economic activity. But yeah, you know, I think you say it's only because people are performing to some extent either the pure spiritual activity of Sankirtan Yajna, or the reflection of that that's there in other systems, that there is whatever degree of prosperity, rain ultimately being the cause of it, that exists. Something else? Yes, Vijay.
Just to play the devil's advocate, It says that rain comes from sacrifice, but if you go to the rainforest, for instance, in South America, there's not much sacrifice, quite sinful, but tons of rain is coming down there.
Well, it's a global phenomena. It's stated when one, at least Srila Prabhupada once said that if one chants spiritual sound vibration, it goes all over the world. It's not necessarily a completely localized effect. Okay, just very short, because we're running out of time here. Nara Narayan Prabhu.
We are faced with the Abrahamic religions, as you pointed out, the Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. Could you elaborate slightly on how perhaps the book of Genesis is a very partial and not particularly accurate rendition of the Brahma Samhita, the process of the creation by Brahma, says creator, and that this has created the illusion that we have a soul, rather than that I, aham brahmasmi, that I am the soul?
Srila Prabhupada has said, that, for example, the Bible, it's like an abridged dictionary. It's giving some truth, but not the complete truth. I think he used that example once. So there is description there how in the beginning God is the source of everything, which Vedanta Sutra also says, Jadmadyasya Yataha, from Krishna, ultimately everything is coming. So, they have that concept, and they have the concept of a first male and female, and that's also there in the Vedic literature. From Brahma comes the first male-female pair, Manu, Swayambhuva Manu, and his consort Shatarupa. So, yes, there are similarities, but mostly they don't have a clear concept of the soul. They have in their teaching the idea that God made the body of the first humans from clay. And they think, it mentions he breathed life into it, but they sometimes don't have a clear conception of what the real self is, which is why they don't like cremation very much. They want to bury the body so that on the judgment day, they confuse the body and the soul. So that you're right, the Vedic literature gives a very clear concept that the soul is different than the body. And I think we're going to have to wrap it up there because we're a little bit over time. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hold the button. Hold it again.